Hey gang, I'm happy to announce that I've partnered with Heroes for Children, an organization that advocates for and provides financial and social assistance to families with children up to 22 years of age battling cancer. I'll be performing a set at their 11th annual Hold'em for Heroes poker tournament, which will be held virtually this year on October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Join me in helping this organization raise money so that no family with a child battling cancer will fight alone. You can get your tickets to the event or donate at holdemforheroes.org. Or just follow the link in the text of this podcast. That's holdemforheroes.org. The 11th annual Hold'em for Heroes poker tournament taking place October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Get involved.
Can I open the vault?
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Hey, the vault.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host, and welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault? Well, I reach back into our vault of over 975 episodes, find one that maybe you haven't heard, or maybe you haven't heard it in a long time, shine it up, and put it back out for you. Today, we go back to July 24th, 2012, episode 88 with legendary drummer Hunt Sales from Tin Machine, Iggy Pop, Todd Rundgren, and so many more. This guy has been playing around for years. You know his work. You know the drum beat at the beginning of Iggy Pop's Lust for Life? That's Hunt. Yeah, baby. Man, we have a great conversation. At this point, he had just started his band, the Hunt Sales Memorial. And he had recorded a little bit of music. I know that in the last couple years, he's put out a record, and I've reached out to him to get him back on the show, but he has not done it. Anyway, going into this show, I had known Hunt for quite a while, and we had worked on a record some years before, and our situation didn't really end that great, but we made up on the show, and it was great to see him. And in the years that have passed, in the last 8 years, I've hung out with him at a lot of social occasions, our mutual friend Gabriel Rhodes' birthday parties and things like that, and it's always great to catch up with Hunt. I can't wait to get him back on the show. This was a really, really good conversation, man. He took me through his life. He's the son of the legendary comic Soupy Sales. And as I said, he played on Todd Rundgren's... He played his first recording session when he was 10. He played with Todd Rundgren when he was 15. Through his 20s in the 70s, he played with Iggy Pop. So many different bands. So many different artists. Then he ended up in Tin Machine with David Bowie, Reeves Gabrels, and his brother Tony Sales. In the 80s. And then through the 90s, the guy's been playing on stuff. He produces stuff. You should hear the Hunt Sales Memorial. Amazing fucking band. He's a great singer. He's one of my favorite, like, soul singers in town. He's all around amazing. A great raconteur and a hilarious dude to talk to. So without further ado, from episode 88 on July 24th, 2012, this is my conversation with legendary drummer Hunt Sales. Let's get down.
How did I get here? From the vault.
We'll be right back.
All right. So you just came from rehearsal?
Yeah.
You might want to scoot up just a little bit on that
one. Okay.
All right. I'll be able to turn you up a little later.
Okay. Fix it in the mix.
We'll fix it in the mix. Famous last words.
Right.
Speaking of fixing the mix, we met on a record that you were producing for our mutual friend, Dickie Lee Irwin.
Oh,
I was
boy.
Engineering. I had a studio. I know. Oh, boy. Here we go. So when we left that project, I know that I was probably in one of the weirdest places I've ever been in my life.
Not much stranger than me.
No. But yeah, I don't know if you remember. When we went in to make that record, I split up from my wife for a while. I left my record label. Half my band left.
I didn't know all that. I just, you know.
Anyway, so I'm glad that we're back and we're talking.
Yeah.
And it was nice sitting outside having a smoke with you. And
it's, you know.
Catching up.
It's in the, let me see how I can put this, in the adversity of strangeness and life and, addiction and a bunch of other shit. One finds it's we're human and please allow us to be human.
I've always gotten that from you. You have very human quality. In fact, we can talk about the intro to that song has a lust for life in itself. Do you ever think that? Do you ever think about playing that? Did you do it and you're on to the next thing or do you?
Yeah, I don't.
You hear it, where do you go? Like right when you hear it, you want to go on a cruise?
Yeah, right. I used to go to Where's My Money? But I'm so removed from that and it's great to hear it and it's wow. And people that like it and say, wow, I really like that. I like your drumming. And that's a compliment. And to be able to do something that touches anybody without sounding corny or anything. But it doesn't get much. It does get better than that, but not much.
Yeah. Well, your contribution to rock and roll, just even in that one iconic song that we just heard, has been tremendous. And
yeah.
So on behalf of dudes that have come behind you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, for rocking.
So that's that's been a great gift or whatever to my career and to my life, being able to have that tune be part of that song.
Yeah.
And the response that it's gotten after all these years.
Yeah.
I mean, how many years ago was that cut?
I was just looking at it. It was 1977.
Right.
Jesus, that was like 35 years ago.
Right. So, at the time, people liked it and it was great, but it's taken on a life of its own. After the fact.
Yeah. Regardless of the cruise ship. I'm sorry.
Regardless of the... Well, if you were sitting... there was a time when... and this is before I worked with him, but I knew him. You know, we were friends through James Williamson, this guitar player from the Stooges. But there was a time when Iggy was more or less living on the streets, and his records, when there used to be record stores, and you'd go in a record store and they'd have this cutout bin, which were basically records that weren't selling.
Right.
And
they literally would cut out an edge.
They'd cut edge out, and they'd be 59 cents for an album. And given that, you know, even then, an album was, what, $6, $7?
Yeah.
Whatever. So that's where he was. And then you go forward to today, shoot forward. Anything's possible. Iggy Pop is a millionaire and has sold a lot of records, still does, and commands a nice audience and payday at the end of each show. So, but who would have thought...
Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, really, yeah.
The one thing that
I think of this guy like covering himself in peanut butter. Seriously, like at the time that he was doing it, and you're like, how in the fuck is that guy going to be on American Idol in 2011 or something? You know what I mean?
The one thing I've seen, one thing that I that something that I've seen. So it's shown me this is a fact that what that has in common with other people that I've seen in the music world, that just the fact of not giving up and staying around, what, there's a word for that by default or what, when by, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I've seen that over and over, the people that don't give up and they stay and stay. Yeah. Now, there's some people you wish would give up.
Right.
But, and no matter how long they're around, it doesn't matter. But that right. seems to be a thread that runs through a lot of people I've seen where they just didn't give up and they just kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
So whatever that means.
Well, I feel that. I mean, you've had a career that's been of that ilk. Like, you know, there's you. One might say that maybe after you played with Todd Rundgren, after Iggy, then the 80s, I know you were probably working consistently and playing in different things, but then it wasn't such a big step until you when it did Tin Machine.
Well, in music, in rock and roll especially, and pop music especially, we're not talking about classical music musicians or jazz musicians. Let's right. let's talk rock and roll pop, yeah. which the world that I come from. In that. To have a career in that, it's a very short career because you'll see bands, the drummer or whoever that was with
right.
Whoever from the 60s, and maybe they had a hit record, they toured for several years, maybe they got one other record in the top 30, but basically it's a 2 to 4 year career for most musicians. So now then there's the side guys,
right?
And I'm somewhere in between to have a, I've been very cursed or been lucky to, I don't know. I guess they say if you do it once, you're lucky. And if you keep doing it over, then you're really lucky or something. I don't know.
To have a band.
Well, yeah. I mean, to go on, I've been at a lot of the time at the right place at the right time. There's a lot of luck involved. There's some skill involved. To go, it seems I've gone, at a certain time I went from project to project to project. I've been really blessed. Starting in the 60s, 69, working with Todd Rundgren, and then going on from there and working with Bob Ezrin, the producer,
right.
and working with Bob Welsh when we had a band called Paris, and then going on and working with Iggy. And then working with people like Bootsy Collins in the studio, and then going and working with David Bowie, and then in between.
Wait, you're blowing through this too fast.
I'm just over 40 years.
Yeah,
you know, it's
an incredible career.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a bunch of lean periods, and when things, you know, when they're. There hasn't been work. We were talking about that a moment ago.
Yeah.
And I've gone out and picked up a sledgehammer and knocked walls down or done yeah. whatever.
I painted houses with Dickie Lee.
Exactly.
Hang on, just time out. I got to turn this AC off.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you were saying the lean times. You're not scared to go out and knock a sledgehammer?
Yeah, I mean, what am I suited for out my work record out there?
Yeah.
But then I was thinking about this. I thought about this and then had to deal with this is that picking the music as a career or, you know, I mean, it seems I turned around one day and was getting paid for what I love to do. And it was after a fact that I went, I may need some more skills. You know, at the age of 15, I'd been recording prior to that. I started recording in studios at about 10 years old.
How did you get into, like, how did you become a drummer? What was the impetus? What was the, I mean, did you make a career choice obviously before 10?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a career,
life choice.
Well, it was something I was interested in and something that's all I really cared about. And it was between the age of 6 and 7, was music. Now.
And what was going on then that piqued your interest like that? Was it Elvis and
no, it would be, well, the Beatles came out. But prior to the Beatles, I had started playing the drums. And it was right around that time I was into stuff I'd hear on the radio. And I guess more leaning towards soul music and stuff. There was a band, I remember getting the record, I was about 6 or 7, by the Orlans, called South Street. And right. It's kind of a New Orleans, that kind of vibe. But I'm second generation, my father being in the business, Soupy Sales. Yeah, and being young, you know, being a little, and being around...
What was that like?
Well, it was normal to me, but, you know, Duke Ellington and these people that would be around, I'd be around Buddy Rich and different musicians and actors and people. Now, I knew I didn't want to be an actor, and my dad...
What was your dad then do? Was he primarily stand-up, or was
TV.
He TV?
By the time I came around, he had his TV show, and it was in Detroit is where he started, and he was gigantic. Not only in Detroit, but other markets, but in Detroit especially, because that's where his show was originated from. He was gigantic, but I knew I didn't want to get, you know, be a stand-up comic or you know, do that. But I like the entertainers and people that I met, and especially the musicians. And I was around a lot of different, those type of people. And I guess it resonated more to me being a musician. But getting back, by the time I was 15, I'd had a little bit of experience, you know, about nine years I was playing, which is just enough to know that you know, not too good, but working on your shit. And my first record, top five record I was on with Todd Rundgren, called We Gotta Get You a Woman.
Yeah.
Now, that record was a giant hit. I think I made $90 for the session. You know, I was the side guy. But
you play drums on We Gotta Get You a Woman.
Yeah, so I had my first hit record. I started getting some session work.
What was that like? What was it like to work with Todd?
It was great. I mean,
yeah?
It was great, because he's like a big kid, you know. A few years older than me, but a true artist. And I met him in New York City at a club called Steve Paul Scene, where a lot of people used to hang out, Hendrix and Stevie Winwood and Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin, everyone. It was a nightclub, everyone would hang out. And I met Todd there, and Todd had just gotten his management and his label together. We got Albert Grossman, who had the band, right. and Bob and Dylan was handling him, and they were getting set for his debut record. I left the NAS, so I met him there, my brother and I, and we jammed. And then shortly after that, I moved back to California from New York. And he came out and stayed with us. We had a house. My parents had a house out there, and stayed with us.
By that time, your dad was like more of a national.
Oh, yeah. This is 68,
yeah.
69. And Todd came out there and stayed with us, and we hung out, and we did the record, his first solo record. And it was a great experience, and it was a great hang, and there was a chemistry there. You can hear it on the record. But at that point... I could say, well, I'm on a hit record and da-da-da, and that 10 cents will buy you a donut hole, basically. And I decided at that point I had studied and gotten tips from different drummers.
Who? Like what?
Buddy Rich was one of them, and a major one is Shelly Mann. Shelly Mann is a great jazz drummer, and he played with Stan Kenton in the 40s, 30s, and he played on The Man with the Golden Arm, if you know that, movie. He worked with Shorty Rogers a lot, and he's one of the original, when you say session musician, he created that. He came out to L.A. after Stan Kenton and playing in big bands in the late 40s, and set up shop there along with a couple of other musicians, and started doing the work for the studios, and became the original, you know, session guys of L.A. There was him, Hal Blaine, other people.
Guys that just drove around all day to different studios sessions, and playing sessions.
Doing coolest. Sessions. I created that. So he helped. He was a friend of the family's, a great influence. He gave me my first hi-hat cymbals, and guided me, and got me some session work later on. But I knew at that point, at 15, was I gonna, you know, wow, I'm on a hit record, and and a lot of people have done a lot more with a lot less.
Wait, but you were 15 when you did the Rundgren record?
Yeah, when I did the Rundgren record.
I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
That's really young.
Yeah. Yes. For any way.
And how old is Tony?
He's 2 years, 2.5 years older than me. So 17. He was 17.
What, I mean, what was that like? I mean, did you go crazy?
No, I mean, I'd already been worked for Morris Levy in New York years earlier at Roulette Records. You know, one of the, if you know about him, he ran Roulette Records and we were assigned to Roulette. So,
With Tony and the Tigers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we'd already done TV and done gigs. We used to do a lot of house parties because we were too young to play. We didn't get a cabaret license, but record hops and stuff like that. So, by the time, I'm not saying I was like a seasoned pro or anything, but, it was my first hit record. Wasn't my first rodeo, though. One of the bigger things I did, but I was smart enough, I think, or scared enough after doing that to realize that I needed to, if I was going to do this, I better learn some more, you know, study and see what else I can pick up. As far as being a musician, and years after, of course, being proficient at other instruments, so I can compose and arrange and all that other stuff.
Right.
But I got further into studying and learning and working on my craft, because there's all the tours and sessions and stuff that I've done that nobody knows about. Not with people that anybody would know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Someone hired you to play on this record. They just got signed to X Records.
Or didn't get signed.
Trying to do this. Yeah.
You know, working, quote, musician on and off. I don't think anyone ever stops learning if they're lucky.
Right.
You know, or if they're, if they're lucky, you won't always want to learn more.
Right. So the Rundgren, you did the record afterward that to Runt, the story of Todd Rundgren or whatever.
Yeah, the Runt was the first record.
The Ballad of Todd Rundgren.
I did a track or two on that.
Okay.
And then he had another drummer, Indy Smart, I think, did the rest of the drums on that. And we tried to do some touring, a couple failed attempts with Todd at doing some touring.
Why did they fail? Just like
that's just business and Lord have mercy, money comes into the picture and show business and all that.
Yeah.
Things get strange, as you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's put it this way. I'm not saying this is right or wrong or anything, but this is my story. When I was 6-7 years old, I started, you know, trying to play an instrument. And I wasn't thinking about A&R people or booking agents or even chicks. Some people get into this to meet women. Whatever reason, it's great. It doesn't really matter what reason. You know, you can speak to people and they'll give you these wacky reasons why they do anything. And that's, who am I? But I never got into music or any of that as I'm going to be a star or I'm going to make lots of money. Because, you know, that's a joke. I mean, you know.
But there is. I was watching a lot of videos today of you, and even in like I think 77, you did this tour with Iggy Pop, and I think the video's from like Dinah Shore Show or something.
Right.
It's Bowie's playing piano,
right?
And there's an energy and excitement that you bring. And there was a Tin Machine video that's live in Hamburg where you do this whole count off thing, and I was like, oh my god, why don't I start a band with that guy? Because I was just like. Like, that is just, you bring a little bit more than just like a straight up drummer guy thing. Do you bring a lot of fire, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
in the playing and the presentation is all very, you're very present and very there and very engaged in what you're doing. And nothing is getting in between you and this.
No, and that can be, if people understand that, which the people that I've worked with did and do. And other people don't, opposed to, I think I've probably missed some gigs by having an attitude like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? You also, what you gave was probably a lot better than what somebody that might have not missed a couple of gigs.
But you hear what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying.
I mean, if you can put into words what I'm saying, I mean, it doesn't make me anything except what I am, right or wrong.
Right.
But that the I don't know any other way to say it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's hard to be. It was hard at times to be a king without a throne.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as much as anyone likes Lust for Life or that, boy, coming back to the States after doing a world tour in 77, before 78, but into 77 with Iggy, and as great as that was,
right,
didn't mean much. You know what I mean? As far as, well, let's get him to do our record or do this or that. It's, you know what I mean? So it was weird at the time. I just remembered that now, but right. I mean, to do some stuff that I thought was really good and others do, but okay, where do you go from there?
Right.
Reinvent yourself, go get a gig, good luck, you know? Yeah. You know what I mean?
So you were saying that you weren't trying to be a star, but in between Rundgren and Iggy, what were your gigs? Were they, those were sessions and
sessions,
like different tours and stuff with people?
Different tours.
Anyone we might know?
No. But soul band. I don't know. No. I mean, yeah.
It wasn't like a Chaka Khan record here or something.
No, but I played with people like Lowell Folsom. I don't know if you know.
I don't know him.
He had a record called Reconsider Baby in late 40s.
Okay.
We're talking pre BB King, blues guy. Used to gig with him.
And is that when you did the Paris, the thing with Bob Welch?
Yeah, that was in 70. Bob Welch was right. The Paris was in 74, 75. Okay. Before that, I did a bunch of gigs with Ray Manzarek from The Doors.
How was that?
That was okay, you know? A lot of weird shows, a lot of Midwest tours, you know what I mean? Working, you know, being a working musician. I had a good band. My brother was playing guitar in that, and Nigel Harrison from Blondie was playing bass. Yeah, so I went out with him and you know, soul bands. I played in Vegas show bands for a while.
How was that?
Well, it was a learning experience, you know, to learn to play that kind of stuff.
Right. Did your dad ever, he didn't work like he didn't have a Vegas thing, did he?
No. Oh. He may have worked downtown Vegas.
But there must be some kind of comfort to being able to just get up and go to work like Ricky Ricardo does. Like, Lucien, going to the club. Like, that guy's never going on tour or anything. He's just always going down to the club to play.
That's...
Like, at about five.
Right. That's why they built Branson, Missouri,
exactly.
I guess, or something.
Does that... Did you like that part of it?
Which part of it?
Like, the being able to just go down to work?
Or
was that too weird?
It gets strange being in a show band, working at hotels, you know what I mean, and doing your sets, you know what I mean, like that. I thought about that after the Vegas experience of, I'll just be a show drummer. But I learned all about it. I did it, and then I split Vegas. And,
right.
Like, you know, I remember we went to take photographs, you know, and they get these band suits.
Yeah.
And the photographer says to, look, we don't want any of that rock stuff with a serious smile. We want to see some money smile.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, the polyester leisure suits or whatever we were wearing. But I've done an awful lot of gigs out there, from country and western and Vegas and soul bands in Alaska. And all kinds of weird gigs. And then I've had some really cool gigs, you know what I mean? Some work with Bootsy Collins in his studio, did a bunch of session work for him, stuff with Leon Russell and Eric Clapton years ago, back in the Delaney Bonnie days. Everyone was out of their mind. But and jingles, TV commercials, Busch Gardens, and all kinds of stuff like that. And assorted sessions, you know, all kinds of weird stuff. I can't even, a lot of it I don't even know, but, you know, hundreds and hundreds of sessions and lots of albums and CDs, you know?
Right. So did you knew Iggy from Detroit? How did you, where did you?
No, I know him from California.
Okay.
I met him through James Williamson and Scott Thurston.
Okay.
And James Williamson, the original Stooges.
Right.
And Iggy, he was producing a record on Iggy called Kill City. And he invited my brother and I in to play on a couple songs. And then I knew Iggy from around Hollywood, you know, from just around the scene. And
what was that scene like? Like, what was that?
The scene?
I mean, come on.
Um,
come on, give me a little scene. I mean, it just seems like, it seems like heaven. You were, I mean, you were running into Iggy Pop on the scene.
Yeah.
That just sounds just amazing.
Well, this is the days of the New York Dolls. Yeah. Between then and it's not the, it's not like it is now. You right. know what I mean? Yeah, the Ramones, yeah. shortly after, were getting started. And all these bands, let's say 74 or 73.
So you were part of a little bit more of that New York and more like street scene rather than the Sunshine LA.
Yeah, though we see we went back and forth between New York and Los Angeles due to my dad's work, and right. then after, so after that, my brother and I going back and forth, living either in New York, or working in New York, or working in LA. Yeah, there was a difference then in the scenes,
right?
And there are all these bands that it's like now. If Johnny Thunders was alive, he'd be playing the Irwin Center tonight.
Yeah,
but
totally.
But back then, you know what I mean? Yeah. I remember he auditioned for a band my brother and I were putting together. He came up. His name was Johnny Gonzalez. This is before the Dolls. And he showed up and had a cool fuzz tone. He couldn't play very well. He didn't have his mojo on yet that he later got, you know.
So did you see any of that? Like, did you see the Ramones from when they first would play and they weren't there yet?
Well,
and then when they were?
The Ramones did their first tour opening for Iggy for us in 76. We took them. We took 77. We helped Iggy out. Iggy had this three records on RCA that were involved with David right. Bowie. And the first record, the first Iggy record that we toured behind was the RCA record.
Kill City? Or no, before Kill City?
No, it'd be after that.
Well, Less for Life.
He had Nightclubbing was on that record.
I don't have it on here, sorry.
It was his first RCA record. Okay. The second RCA record is, and third one were the ones that my brother and I did, which was Less for Life and then TVI, which was like a bootleg.
Right.
But we toured with him to support that record. And on that tour, there were two acts that Iggy took out. One was the Ramones, which was their first touring deal in the States that I know about.
Right.
They may have been to Europe already once, but and Blondie. So we took both those acts out to open for us, and all I remember is the Ramones rehearsing the whole set before they went on stage.
Took like 5 minutes.
Yeah, but they'd run through the whole set in their dressing room and then go on and do it again. There's some funny guys.
it's what we were talking about working, you know what I mean? Like they weren't entitled.
No,
those guys knew.
Now, you wouldn't say, like, we're going to hire the guitar player or the bass player. We got a gig coming this week, and it's a bar mitzvah. And you got a band like that, it's the sum of the whole.
Yeah.
And you got four guys that are determined and like a gang, and they worked and honed their thing, and they were awesome. Like any great band that rehearses, and it's the sum of the whole.
Yeah, that shit comes out of your speakers.
Yeah,
it does. Like that feeling comes out of your like.
It's real.
So to say that you and your brother were touring with Iggy before you did this Lust for Life record, well, there you go. That's the feeling that you get coming out is like a band that's been working.
That helps cement that record by we did like 72 gigs in 80 days world from U.S. to America and Canada, and that'll get a band together.
Yeah,
and going in and doing that record, it was smart of David and Iggy. Right after that tour to go in shortly after and do this record and capture that energy and experience and the tightness that we had.
Right.
You know, it made doing the next tour really easy, you know, but
real quick, what was that like working with Bowie as a producer at that time? Cause I know you were in a band with him later, but what was it like what was, did he give cool direction? Did he just let you do what you wanted and was blown away? Yeah.
Yeah. We did what we wanted to do. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's not stupid. He sits back and lets things happen, and he may say something, and sometimes it's a really great idea, and then sometimes it sucks, but he'll even laugh at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's very intuitive, very creative, person, artist, musician, you know.
Was Iggy very involved then, or was he like, because you get these, as an outsider that doesn't know him, you get these views of maybe he was just like floating around, and like everyone's like, hey, come in and sing this.
No, he wrote all the lyrics, most of them, and had some ideas, you know what I mean? No, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but they surrounded themselves with the right people.
Yes.
You guys went on this tour, and you just came back and made the record.
Look, Iggy's done 30, 40 records, maybe more. I did one or two of them, and then a bunch of other ones that are released. But let's say studio records. Yeah. I know what my contribution is, yeah, and it's something. Iggy, he's a great artist. He's a great lyricist. He's got some great ideas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think it all came together. It really came together on this record.
Yeah.
Not that it didn't on his other releases, right, but it's just...
On this one in particular has...
Strong.
It's this thing.
Yeah. And it's more of a rock record, if you could call it that. But it seems that all the punk people and everyone, it seemed to dig the record, and it's held up.
Well, I think with the punk thing would resonate because of it, just the rawness.
The rawness.
Just the kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
It's the way that you play. You don't hold anything back, and that's
the
beautiful thing about that record.
Yeah, and there's no lyrics in there that say the word rock and roll.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You can't lose with that.
So you did those tours. You did the Dinah Shore show, and I'm sure a lot of other TV shows. It was just weird to see a shirtless guy on the Dinah Shore show.
Anyway, you slice it up, that was very strange.
Yeah.
And, these days, everybody is hip.
Yeah, yeah.
Still back then, you see these things that go even further back. You see these guys that are interviewing Bob Dylan, and they look like they're 60 years old. Yeah, meanwhile, they're maybe 3 years older than him.
Right.
But just the difference between an artist and then your normal person.
Now
everybody's a rock star, motherfucker. Everyone, your mama's a rock star, you know?
You can buy rock star clothes at Target.
Exactly. It's the way they sell the shit these days. What is real? Does it matter? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, sometimes it's real, but
yeah,
there's a lot of shit that's
a lot
real,
of facsimile.
So after that stuff, did you live in LA then for a long time? And
yeah, we lived in LA, did a lot of work in Europe with them and the States, and then lived in LA. Traveled around different places working, and then worked on stuff my brother and I.
So how does that work? You and your brother are like a real sort of like package thing throughout your career. I don't know if it's a package thing, but you obviously
we've worked
probably
together,
play
yeah.
well together.
Yeah.
And I mean, is there like a...
It just worked out that way. Just,
yeah.
And then, you know, he did his thing, I did my thing. And then years later, we got together and worked again with David and basically took up where we left off with Iggy, except
right.
without Iggy, and did the Tin Machine thing.
How did that come about?
My brother ran into him at a rap party for the Glass Spider tour. And this was, I don't know what year that Glass Spider thing,
87, sorry.
Okay, 87. I was here in Austin doing some producing work.
Okay.
I was going back and forth between LA and Austin. He ran into David. David said, I got this guitar player and this guy Reeves, and I thought about you guys and da 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 da. Next thing I know, we get together and we're jamming. And then next thing I know, we're recording. And it wasn't necessarily a David Bowie record. It was, you know.
It was definitely different.
Yeah, it was the David Bowie record. He had the deal, but it was basically everyone contributing, like, close as you can get to a band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How was it like to work in a band with Bowie?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, it was some of the same thing that brought that together was the experience going back with Iggy when he was on the road with us with Iggy playing piano and then overseeing things, helping Iggy out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, there was some chemistry and some friendship and stuff that we had, my brother.
I saw some interviews with you guys today, and there was definitely like you were by far like you can tell that you were the clown of that group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'd like, fuck with everybody. Such,
yeah, you did.
You know?
It's really, and they all laugh. It's very cool to watch. It's like, wow, this guy's like really.
So there was something going on. I don't know what, but enough to, look, I'm very aware that, okay, I'm a drummer amongst other things. I'm not the only drummer. There's 8 billion drummers and 8 billion musicians. And why did I work with anybody? I don't know why anything is anything really, but it doesn't hurt that when the Iggy thing was going on, there was some chemistry and friendship or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get stupid about it. That years later, given the right situation, we hook up and we did something else.
Yeah.
For right or wrong, good or bad.
Yeah.
And now we did this other thing together. And I remember Pete Townsend, if I may,
yeah,
said to Reeves, well, David's got to have some friends. So, so I don't know.
I met Reeves a couple of times.
Yeah.
He was friends with my A&R guy when I was signed to Elektra, but
okay,
he seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice bunch of guys. so I don't know. You know, it was an experience. There was a couple records that were decent. The Tin Machine, I thought that there was some clever stuff on there and some stuff that was real.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember watching like a Friday night thing on ABC, concert of you guys. I never saw you live, but I saw you on that. I saw you on Saturday Night Live, I remember. And I was always, I liked it all, except I didn't want David Bowie to play that Steinberger guitar.
Exactly.
But I understand.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, somebody said to me, you know, when we were doing that, man, this must be really great because you got David as the singer. And it's really, in one way, it was not good. You know what I mean? There's times when we wanted to work when he didn't want to work and he didn't have to work. You know what I mean? I'd run into other bands on the road.
No, that's a common thing with, I mean, you know, one guy is a gazillionaire.
I mean, let's get real.
Other people have to pay their rent.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and that, you know, that can make things a little strange at times.
Yeah.
Let's get real.
Yeah.
But it had its moments and there were parts of it I wouldn't trade for anything. They were real as real gets. You know, I was always worried if the people, audience, and I think a lot of people after the fact, they listen to the record now and really like it and understand it more now than when it came out. There's a lot of people that resented, oh, what's he doing with those people? You know, you get to Europe,
especially
France and stuff, and they just like...
Well, it was far more rock and roll anything he had done since Ziggy.
Right. You know? It was a return to the Spiders, maybe as close as he could get to that being a billionaire now. But
it's weird to come off of Let's Dance and the Glass Spider thing.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden you're like,
exactly,
you know, but, with the Sales Brothers.
But I'd use that as a fair, and I'm not going to compare myself to Mick Ronson or any of those guys.
Right.
But that was the last setting that he had that was more like a band. When you know, in the early days, having Mick Ronson and the other guys in the band, as far as I believe.
Right.
You know?
The other thing I thought was always good about it is that it wasn't pandering and it wasn't blatantly trying to sell records in any way. It wasn't like all of a sudden Bowie went hair metal or something and had a ballad.
No.
You know what I mean?
We did whatever we wanted to do. We made that record for ourselves, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, it was weird. I mean, Reeves is fucking weird.
Yeah.
You know? And just the juxtaposition of all four of you guys, or maybe like you and your brother, and then, you know, Bowie being so like Euro, whatever, and then this outer space guitar guy.
Right.
You know, that made for a really fucking interesting band.
Yeah, I thought it did. Yeah. A lot of things get in the way of something like that we've just... we're talking about considering what was going on with music then, and you know how strange things were.
It was like Rick Astley and shit was going on then, right?
Yeah, and Nirvana was just starting up, and Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And somebody will say, well, how real could it be?
It wasn't trying to be grunge, and it wasn't trying to be the ballad metal people or makeup people. It was, I mean, you guys like wore suits.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, it was.
Some A&R guy came up and said, you know, I really like this. Some guy from some label, we were rehearsing or doing something. And the guy says, man, they sound great, but their look, they should be wearing.
Right. Exactly.
And at this point, the A&R guys are wearing leather and headbands and shit.
Exactly.
We tried to make that like a non-issue, just put on some suits, kind of like the big band days or whatever, where you have all these personalities, but it's not about the clothes and all that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, you know, to kind of take away from it, what is rock and roll? Is it, it's a feeling? Is it an attitude? Is it what you wear? I hope not. The A&R guy saying they should be wearing leather pants. Well,
well, you made it without the leather pants.
Exactly.
So, do you want to take five and have a cigarette?
Or yeah.
Do you want to? Okay, let's take five.
Used to it, right?
Yep. It ain't going back the other way.
No, that's the weirdest part about it. So we were just outside talking about how everything's changed. You were telling me there's a downloadable book. yeah. about you and your brother called Sales Brothers.
Right.
And someone wrote that.
It's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon?
Yeah.
And yeah, and there's a Sales Brothers album.
Right. Called Hired Guns.
And is that's available like on the internet somewhere?
Yeah, on iTunes, I believe. Sales Brothers, yeah. A record we made that we worked on right after the Iggy thing in 79, 80, around that time. And we went out and performed some shows.
Did you sing?
Yeah. My brother and I were both singing, fronting a band. It was like, you know, soul thing. Horns and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then my brother got into a bad car accident. So that kind of put things on hold for a long time.
Right.
Yeah, we're talking about the business,
mm-hmm.
whatever business. I'm not sure. You know what's left of making music and putting it out there. You know, and that whole world that's completely changed from when I got into the business, which was
oh my god! Like how? I mean,
I got in right. You know, right after the beginning of. The whole pop thing in the 60s is when I started. So in my lifetime, I've seen the beginning of that, the middle, and then the end of it.
Yeah.
And it's there's no record stores anymore. There's phone stores.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Lord have mercy.
Do you have an iPod?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Had to get one.
Yeah, you have to.
Gotta have one.
Yeah. So people should check out this book. Have you read it?
Bits of it.
Did she interview you?
Yeah,
for
she interviewed me for...
At length?
Yeah, at a bit. And it gives some insight on my life and my brother's life, our careers, and I'm sure it's a good read.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So have you thought about writing one yourself?
Yeah, I've thought about that. So I've done a little bit of work towards that, and it's
kind of daunting, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
you know, you don't really know what all you want to tell.
I know there's a lot of stuff in there, but a lot of people are dead that I had experiences with. So I guess it's okay now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know that whole thing of the laundry, of getting into all that stuff, and I don't speak to a lot of people about a lot of stuff. It's you know what I mean? I don't know. It's, you know, the world we live in now where years ago you'd go to the grocery store and you'd see this National Enquirer and all that. That's the way everything is now.
Yeah.
They used to be like, oh, that's really trash, but everything is trash now, isn't it? Everyone's telling everything and this and that. And these TV shows, reality shows, they got shows on pawn shops and alligator hunters. And boy, you got a job. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a TV show.
Yeah. Exactly.
About a guy working a job. That's how fucked up things are.
There's a show about a guy working a fucking job.
They got a new show about bums, but I don't know if that's all bums. But no, I don't know. You know, it's really the reality thing, and most of it isn't reality. It's that's the premise is reality, kind of. It's based on roughly, but I don't know, pawn shops. I used to go pawn shop, and they give you, like, nothing. They don't, like, what, you bring them some gold stuff, or, we'll give you $20. It's, how are you? Well, how am I? I wouldn't be here if I was doing too well. You know what I mean? What am I doing in a pawn shop? You might have a problem, you know, you know? And it's Sunday, and they go, this isn't a pawn shop. It's a hardware store. Oh, okay. That's when you know you got a problem.
Yeah.
But, everything's changed. And it's weird, whether it's the Rolling Stones, bands like people love that are great bands, and, you know, everyone's after the same thing to get a hit record.
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Yeah.
I think it still is now.
Yeah.
And just the way people are going about it is different, and well, anyone can do it. No, not really.
Is there anything lately that's out that you are like, wow, this is great?
What? I woke up today. I thought that was awesome. And I'm sitting here talking to you. That to me is good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow. I try to stay in the moment. And today's not a bad day.
No.
And let's see what we can do today.
Yeah.
And tomorrow could be really good. I'm kind of looking forward to tomorrow. And the past, I try not to stay in that or live in that.
Yeah.
You know, I try to acknowledge it. I'll try to look at look back occasionally to see, maybe, you know, to learn maybe what I could do better so I don't repeat some of the same stupid shit, which I know I will do. But try to stay in now and look forward to tomorrow. Really, that's where I'm at. You know what I mean? Yeah. You asked me earlier.
Does having a young child at all remind you of that on a constant basis?
Yeah, a child will remind you that it's not all about you.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And which is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like the person said, enough about me. What do you think about me? Yeah. You know what I mean? It'll definitely, I feel like Mickey Rooney sometimes, but having a young child, it's great, you know, to see things through their eyes. But I try to stay in what's happening now and what's going to happen tomorrow. And I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, living in the past.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your past. Let's talk about the Hunt Williams Memorial.
Yeah. The Hunt Sales Memorial.
Hunt Sales. Hunt Williams. What is wrong with
him? Well, that's someone else. He's coming in after me. The Hunt Sales Memorial.
Okay, so I might edit one thing.
Okay. Hunt Sales Memorial is my band that I have now, and we play locally here in Austin, Texas from time to time. Just finished a CD worth of songs. And hopefully later this year we'll be out in some other areas playing, you know, hopefully outside of Texas.
Do you have anything booked now?
Nothing.
Nothing on the books?
No, but that can change from moment to moment. And
is there like a Facebook or website or something that people can find? I find that a lot of people that listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you can go on Reverb Nation. There's a bunch of songs up there on Reverb Nation under the Hunt Sales Memorial, and there's some videos up there.
Some good videos on YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube, somebody shot some videos from some gigs, so you get an idea of what we're doing, what we're trying to do. And I'm just trying to keep busy between that and working with other people on their projects, whether it's show up and play some drums or guitar or bass or write a song or sing or whatever, work on other people's projects, that and my own thing, just trying to keep active and keep busy.
Yeah.
You know?
I get that. Like, I really respect that a lot of people don't go through, you know, Donnie Wynn?
Yes.
There's, you know, guys like him and like you who are older than me give me hope for myself in the future. You know what I'm saying? Like you guys get a lot out of playing music.
Yeah.
And you put in everything you have, like you did when you were, you know, with you, it's like when you were 6 or 10 playing on your first records or whatever. But there's an enthusiasm and an excitement to create music.
Yeah.
That is really inspiring.
Thank you. I mean, I think one thing that we've done and that you've done the same as me, we spent a lot of hours sitting in rooms playing guitar or whatever instrument, and for no other reason except there's something that we've gotten out of it, and hopefully something we still get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it all can't be perfect all of the time, but there's a big difference going down and do a session for somebody. Then can you come down and help me paint this bathroom?
Yeah.
Now, you know, you go
help paint. Nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with going to paint a bathroom, but you don't have anything invested in that, and that it's, you don't love doing it, but, you know, it's a job, but things could always be a lot worse. So I can speak for myself. I don't have to be in front of the scene. I can be behind the scene, and I like working with other people and helping them, you know, a young band
achieve what they're
Try to. I'll do a few records a year here of some local bands and you know, work as arranger, producer, whatever, and help them finish up their songs or go in and record them. You know, you call it a producer, whatever you want to call it. That's what the gig is. But I enjoy doing that, getting involved and helping people try to see their vision or whatever, you know what I mean, and help them. It just doesn't all have to be about me. It's, you know what I mean. Yeah. It's
well, from all like the engineers and producers and artists you've worked with, I'm sure that when you go in to do something, there's almost like it's almost like you probably have learned the force by now. You know what I mean? Like you can feel your way through things.
Oh
make
yeah,
sure they feel good and everything's right.
I think with anyone. If you've been doing whatever for a while, if you can get in touch with your instincts, and let your instincts guide you and your experience. Yeah. I think that's more powerful than it, I mean, ideas are good and great, and we all need them. But if you can let that kind of run the show, it's really great, isn't it? I mean, because everybody has their experience, and if they can just put that into what you're doing,
trust your feelings.
Trust your feelings and your instincts. Not all your feelings, but given the right situation, feelings will really help you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do. I've tried to lean on those a little bit more and go with that. Feel my way through it. You know what I mean? How does this feel? Okay, this and it'll. If you get still and get good with the universe and all that stuff, it'll kind of tell you where to go.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. But I get that from you. You seem very clear, very healthy and happy and content.
I am.
Yeah.
You know.
You're good. Yeah.
I'm good today. Yes. Finally. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's a good thing to be grateful for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To be in my right mind and my health is good and I'm there with it. And you know what? I still give a shit and I still care. Sometimes, and everyone gets this, you get this been there, done that feeling. You know what I mean? Been there, done that. And if you live long enough or been doing anything long enough, you can get that. And it's great. It's like, I want to hear something I haven't heard. And, you know, and let me see something I haven't seen.
Yeah.
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
You know? And always looking for that note.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know exactly what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you mean, man.
And to, like you mentioned, to be doing this and still caring about it. Well, I'd say if you're doing this and you don't care about it, then do something else.
Right.
It's, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, this is not by no means tooting my horn, but I, you know, Ian Moore.
Yeah.
He put out a record a few years ago and he needed a second guitar player, keyboard player, backup singer guy.
Right.
And I mean, we've known each other for a long time. We're very good friends. I love what he does. I loved that record especially. And when he asked me to do it, to play with him, at first I was just kind of like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
That's one of us? Oh. Is that you or me? It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
So when he said, I was like, well, what did you want me to do? Oh, like, why did you want me to do it? And he said, I knew that no matter what the pay was or whatever, you would put everything you had into it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's saying
that
a lot.
You're going to go on tour. You're not going to be like, oh, I'm only getting X amount, and so I'm just going to put in X amount of. It's like I went there with him. Like he was doing his record. He was putting everything he had into it. I stood next to him and supported him and put everything I had into it.
Look, there's two reasons. Yeah, there's two reasons people hire people. There may be some other reasons, but this is what I've seen.
Yeah.
One, they hire someone, and it's about the money. And you did this with Elvis Presley or whoever you did it. So I'm going to hire you. And then the one that's more prevalent is, let's get this guy. He's a team player. We like hanging out. He's got, we like to hang with them, and it becomes the sum of the whole.
Yeah.
And then you create this thing together.
Yeah.
Like all really happening artists do. So that's why, you know, why would they want me? You might have said, but that's the reason, because you can get in there and be like part of the team.
And I knew whose name was on the marquee every night too.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't like Ian featuring Johnny.
It was
his thing, and I was there. You know,
I'd rather have that any day than let's hire this person and pay them too much money, and they won't care, and they'll come in and leave. And,
exactly.
And who wants that?
No one.
That's right.
Well, some people do, but not people we work with.
No, I mean, you know, getting something that's close to real, somebody that'll be real with you. You know.
Yeah. So, we're good. We're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here.
I really appreciate you coming over. And I will say, on the record, I've gotten a lot of requests. Like, when I get emails from people that are like, oh, hey, you got to... Hunt Sales is a name that comes up a lot.
Good.
So, hopefully this will satiate some of these people. Maybe it'll give them a taste and make them go out and read the book.
Okay.
Which is available on Amazon. It's called the Sales Brothers.
Yeah,
okay.
Sales Brothers.
Not the Williams Brothers.
No, not the Williams. That's another book. But I heard it's good. I heard it's not bad.
So So, and I was a huge fan of your dad's. Uh-huh. I know we talked about this when we did that Dickie record.
Right.
When I was a kid, he did a lot of morning shows.
Right.
Like Saturday, he was on one in particular, but he was on
What's My Line for years.
In the mid 70s,
he had a show.
Yeah,
every day.
The Soupy Sales show.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can see it on YouTube.
You can.
Yep.
He was a funny man.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
You know, pioneer.
Yeah. What about your mom? Was she in the arts? She was a mom.
She started as a singer and a model for department stores.
She's still around?
Yep.
Yeah.
She's still around.
Good.
Yep.
Good. Well, congratulations. And hey, anything else that I'm missing? Is there anything you want to say before you go?
I hope everyone enjoys this.
Yes.
As much as I have.
Thank
it's
you.
Good to see you again, Johnny. It's
very good to see you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Start off where we left off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's. You know what I'm saying.
I know you're
what
saying.
I'm trying to say.
I know you're trying to say.
I don't know what I'm saying, but you know.
Thank you so much, hon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And so, that, my friends, is why I do this fucking show. That was amazing. I feel so honored to have gotten to have Hunt come to my house and inspire me so much to still have that passion to play, you know? What a lucky man, a beautiful person. And I want to thank him. I want to thank Bevis again. Bevis Griffin, you are a fucking champion. Just a Saturday to Bevis. Someday I'm going to steal your Rolodex, Bevis. I'm going to call all those motherfuckers in the middle of the night. This is Johnny. How did I get here? So anyway, thank you, Hunt, for coming to my house. I'm speaking directly to you. He sent me a text thanking me after, you know, just a little while after he left today. And that really made me feel good. And I'm glad that he felt good about our conversation. So did I. And I just I cannot tell you how grateful I am to get to do this. And when I have conversations with people like Hunt and I get inspired to go out and do this, I feel amazing. So I want to thank Hunt and all these guests like Kathy Valentine, Alejandro Escovedo, Donnie Wynn, Kelly Willis, Bruce Hughes, all the people that don't stop, just keep on going. So Hunt's got his new band. I called him the Hunt Williams Memorial, but this is the Hunt Sales Memorial. No longer Hunt Williams. That's a different family. I don't know where I got that, and that's an incredibly embarrassing thing, and I just pointed it out again, just in case you might have forgotten it. Anyway, thanks again for listening to you. I hope that you're inspired by this in some way, and I hope you enjoy it. Let me know. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter. This is the Hunt Sales Memorial. Thank you for listening. Let's get down.
As I sit here all alone, sleep a wink last night.